Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And greetings, everyone. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues with our regular crew, not with us today, but Walker's here. Walker Wildman. And are we going to be Facebooking today?
Yes, we're on Facebook Live.
And, on Facebook Live.
If you were watching, I actually signaled to Fred to open up the show because he's been doing radio much longer than I have. So I'm trying to learn from Fred today on radio.
Hey, listen, no problem to it. I love radio. People have asked me, I've had the option through the years of TV or radio. I just like radio because it's like this companion. You're just rolling along in life and having a talk with folks.
So yeah.
I always have loved radio.
And you usually get people's undivided attention because they're usually in vehicles traveling.
Yep, traveling along.
So there's not, you know, with TV or, you know, on your phone, a lot of things are going on.
Yeah.
But with radio, we have a lot of loyal listeners.
And as usual today on Today's Issues, we have a lot of news going on. You know, I was listening this morning to a House Speaker, Paul Ryan. He was interviewed on Fox. And, you know, initially, Paul Ryan did not have a good relationship with Donald Trump. Certainly through the campaign, there was a lot of tension there. But it was really interesting to listen to Paul Ryan this morning. And it's what I was detecting from the conversation, he's a huge fan of Donald Trump right now. Mm-hmm. He has, some people would say, gone over to the other side. he's in the camp with Trump now, and he seems to be listening to him talk about, you know, what's going to be done with regards to, for instance, the military and military spending, mm-hmm. and he was all praise for Donald Trump finally looking at the contracts. Now, we've done stories, Walker, through the years of military contracts where they pay $25 for a hammer versus, you know, you and I can go to the hardware store and pay $5 for it.
Right.
And people scratch their heads and say, what in the world is going on here?
Yeah.
Well, Donald Trump is doing something about that. And he says, you know, we now have somebody in the White House who's unlike any other president we've ever had. He is a businessman, mm-hmm. and he is running the ship like a businessman, like a CEO. And that's what we're seeing day after day after day. Now, your dad is not here in the studio with us this morning. Tell us why.
Yeah, Tim, my dad, I call him Tim on radio, and I call him Dad when I go to his office.
So, and you better.
Yeah, but I say that because some people, when I say Dad on radio, maybe they're a first-time listener, they don't know who Dad is. So anyways, my dad went to the National Prayer Breakfast this morning and actually was sitting table behind some of Trump's top advisors, including the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson.
Just sworn in last night.
Yeah. His son-in-law, forgot his name.
Trump's son-in-law?
Yeah, Trump's Kushner.
Yes, yeah.
Jared Kushner sat behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Actually sat right beside Vice President Pence, his daughter.
Wow.
So right in there at the prayer breakfast, this is a historic prayer gathering that I believe every president since Eisenhower has attended.
Yeah.
So that's where Tim is today.
And lots of times it doesn't generate big news, but back in 2013, it got a lot of news because that's when the world was introduced to Dr. Ben Carson.
Yeah.
Who basically got up there with President Obama sitting right beside him and tore into Obama policies.
That was brave.
That was very brave, but it was very good for Dr. Ben Carson. The world now knows who he is. And, of course, there's been some controversy through the years as President Barack Obama was there, some of the things that he has said at that prayer breakfast. Mm-hmm. But this morning, it was President Donald Trump, his first turn at the prayer breakfast. And I tell you what, I listened to pretty well the whole thing. He got a huge applause when he walked in the room. And he had an audience, I think I can say, that was very friendly to him. Mm-hmm. And right off the bat, we're going to allow you to hear a few of the excerpts from the speech this morning. It wasn't a long speech, about 15 minutes, but I want to play you some of the highlights. One of the first things that he addressed was the so-called Johnson Amendment, Walker. Now, that has been around, as you may pick up from it. It was brought in by President Johnson and basically muzzled and has muzzled pastors through the years from endorsing a candidate. And during the election campaign, it's something that Donald Trump mentioned a number of times, that he's going to get rid of the Johnson Amendment to allow pastors, if they wish, to endorse a candidate. His thrust has been there is no way that churches, that pastors should not be allowed to exercise their First Amendment rights. So let's hear what he had to say this morning about the Johnson Amendment.
Among those freedoms is the right to worship according to our own beliefs. That is why I will get rid of and totally destroy the Johnson Amendment and allow our representatives of faith to speak freely and without fear of retribution. I will do that. Remember.
So there you have it. I will destroy the Johnson Amendment. Can't get any stronger than that.
What I've learned is when Donald Trump says things like that, he means it.
Yes.
Thus, he's following through on, he's already followed through on almost 50% of his campaign promises as far as what he put out publicly. But also, this Johnson Amendment, if I'm not mistaken, it affects 501c3s, as in American Family Radio,
American
Family Association.
That is correct.
So if you notice, we can talk about politics, talk about policies, et cetera, but we can't come out here and say, you need to vote for so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be endorsing, which is what pastors cannot do, thus the Johnson Amendment that President Trump is talking about. So if that Johnson Amendment is repealed, you know, I don't know if we would even get into the endorsing business. I don't think that would be wise on certain occasions, but it would at least free us up to at least talk more openly about politics and politicians and how we agree or disagree without the fear of the IRS or the FCC saying, look, we're going to pull your license, et cetera.
It's been interesting over the last several years. There has been a Sunday each year where there have been a group of pastors who have gone out and said, basically, we don't care what the Johnson Amendment says. And they were hoping, here's what's interesting, they were hoping that the IRS would come after them.
Yeah.
And the IRS has always failed because, and here's the reason, they know that the First Amendment rights would trump. They want the IRS to take them to court because they know they would win in court under freedom of speech and that it shouldn't be curtailed. Now, the reality is there are a number of churches across our country over the years. I remember Bill Clinton going into churches that were friendly to the Democratic Party, and others have done it. But this needs to be dealt with, and Donald Trump has promised to deal with it, to take that kind of cloud away, to allow pastors. And Walker, you know, people may ask, well, why is that so important? Why is it important that pastors be allowed to say something from the pulpit?
Yeah.
Because like never before, public policy is intersecting with spiritual values like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important.
Yeah, and I'll say this. It will also, if the Johnson Amendment is repealed, it will provide more accountability to our pastors and our laymen.
Mm-hmm.
Because what some pastors are hiding behind today is, well, I cannot speak on much of politics because I'm afraid that I will get in trouble as far as our church's 501c3 status. But if you repeal that Johnson Amendment, the pastors that have been hiding behind that Johnson Amendment in order to stay non-controversial, they'll be singled out because we'll say, look, there's no more threat.
Yeah.
Let's talk about politics.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, a good thing. Now, we do have to, it is an amendment. So this is not the kind of thing that you can make disappear with an executive order. So there's some question in there just how the president would go about doing this. Perhaps it is telling the IRS not to go ahead and enforce that or something along that line. I'm not an expert in that field.
Right.
Maybe Abe will come in sometime and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I believe the way it could work is they could probably attach an amendment to any legislation that essentially undercuts the Johnson Amendment.
Right.
So it would kind of override it. You wouldn't necessarily have to go directly repeal the Johnson Amendment. You just pass legislation which undermines the Johnson Amendment.
Also at the prayer breakfast this morning, President Trump addressed a number of different things, but he paused and to praise and to draw attention to our military. And Brent, well, let's hear a little bit of that.
No one has inspired me more in my travels than the families of the United States military. Men and women who have put their lives on the line every day for their country and their countrymen. I just came back yesterday from Dover Air Force Base to join the family of Chief William Ryan Owens as America's fallen hero was returned home. Very, very sad, but very, very beautiful. He died in defense of our nation. He gave his life in defense of our people. Our debt to him and our debt to his family is eternal and everlasting. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. We will never forget the men and women who wear the uniform. Believe me.
Wow. A
very touching moment, Walker.
Yeah, that's powerful, and it's honestly refreshing to have a commander-in-chief who sets aside his speeches not to talk about how America has a horrible past, we need to turn from our ways, you know, yada, 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 in the correction mode, which Obama seemed to be in for 8 years. But he's actually commending, honestly, genuinely commending the men and women of our military, which I know is a sigh of relief for some of them.
Absolutely. And he had to, this was his first time as a president, he had to do that duty that presidents have had to do through the years, and that was yesterday. He went out to Dover Air Force Base to meet with the family of this lost Navy SEAL. And if you're not familiar, it was a raid that took place several days ago in Yemen against an Al-Qaeda nest. And a lot of bad guys were killed in that raid. And they also, we have been told, collected a lot of very useful information. And in military terms, that usually means they may have got some phone numbers and addresses of some other bad guys. Mm-hmm. But the first time that President Trump had to deal with that. He also, during his speech at the National Prayer Breakfast this morning in Washington, he opened up, you know, I was having a discussion with one of our reporters before I heard the speech. And I said, now, I wonder if he's going to go the route of something scripted or if he'll talk off the cuff. And it was kind of a mixture of both.
Yeah.
And but at one point, he talked about his own faith journey. And let's hear a little bit about that.
I was blessed to be raised in a churched home. My mother and father taught me that to whom much is given, much is expected. I was sworn in on the very Bible from which my mother would teach us as young children. And that faith lives on in my heart every single day. We are not just flesh and bone and blood. We are human beings with souls. Our republic was formed on the basis that freedom is not a gift from government, but that freedom is a gift from God.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Wow.
From anyone in a high of office as the president.
It was amazing. There was another very interesting point, and we don't have that clip, but we're going to try to get the whole speech up on One News Now a little bit later today. But it was a very interesting point. Of course, Donald Trump is a billionaire. He's not going to take a salary as president. He took a big drop.
Yeah.
he's a billionaire. But he talked about the importance of being at peace with God. He says he knows a lot of rich people. He travels in those circles. Mm-hmm. But he says, you know, he knows all, and I'm paraphrasing here, he knows a lot of people who are very wealthy, but he said they're very miserable.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's really something for a billionaire to say, that some of his friends who have a whole lot of money like he does are miserable people.
Yeah.
And he talked about, you know, what's really important. And then he contrasted that with folks who may not have a lot of money, but he says they're the happiest people that he knows.
Yeah.
And so there again is, you know, the Donald Trump that a lot of people knew prior to running for – he ran for president. He was just this rich guy from New York and, you know, the apprentice program. And
yeah.
And a lot of people, let's be very frank, dismissed him as a bit of a rich guy doofus.
Yeah.
That was the image that was out there. But the more we listen, the more we listen to candidate Trump and now President Trump, this guy runs a whole lot deeper than a lot of folks thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say there is a lot more in the spiritual realm going on in the White House than most of us know.
Hmm.
And I believe Christians have played a large part in that, whether it be prayer or some of the Christian men and women that are around Trump and surround him. But there is a lot going on, and without going into details, there are people around the president which are true believers in Jesus Christ, that their goal and their intentions in being an advisor to the president are to point him towards Christ and mm-hmm. towards the Bible and towards Scripture. So I think as Christians, our country is in this situation not coincidentally,
yeah.
But by God's hand, and we need to take advantage of this moment and not stray. And that means praying for our president, encouraging him, and at times challenging him to do the right thing.
Yeah, he's been remarkable in the face of the opposition that he has faced so far. But he's been a leader. In that we are seeing Republicans up on the Hill, Capitol Hill, standing their ground.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing this battle for President Trump's nominations. Yesterday we saw it. You know, the Democrats didn't show up for a committee vote.
Yeah.
All right. Orrin Hatch. Senator Orrin Hatch
it's
says.
It's amazing what leadership does.
I know. We're going to have the vote anyway, folks, whether the Democrats are here or not. And so they're pushing these through.
Yeah.
So we're going to see a whole lot more of this kind of leadership. He is a businessman. He is, like we said, you know, he didn't need to do this for the money. Mm-hmm. He's doing this, I believe, for love of country. Also been impressed by his family, too. I mean, they're solid kids.
Yeah.
That was noted during the campaign. They're not a bunch of spoiled brats.
Right.
You know, billionaire brats.
Yeah.
I just want to go back for a moment to the aspect of religious freedom. It's very interesting, the Associated Press, in its coverage of the prayer breakfast this morning, because they quote some people from the homosexual community concerned about when Donald Trump talks about religious freedom. Now, why, you know, I'm not justifying their complaint, but here it is. They believe that what they call their rights may be jeopardized. And what this is going to, for example, is the Klein case, the bakers from Oregon, who basically were taken to court because they refused to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. Mm-hmm. And they believe, and I think I may agree with them at this point, what Donald Trump is saying, he believes in what he calls the sacred right of religious freedom, for people to live out their religious beliefs. I believe he's going to work towards that there won't be more cases like the Klein case, mm-hmm. where they were put out of business and fined $135,000 by the state out there for simply refusing to partake in a homosexual wedding. And of course, we have the cases of Christian-run hospitals. There are many Catholic organizations out there that run hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. And I think Donald Trump is squarely in the camp that you don't have to give up your religious beliefs if you run one of these organizations, if you run a business.
Right.
You know, the Kleins were not saying, we hate homosexuals. Mm-hmm. In fact, they said they had many homosexual customers, and if they came in and they wanted a plate of brownies, they'd bake them a plate of brownies.
Right.
This was simply about not partaking in something that they deemed to be sin. And I think you're going to see a fight from this White House to return us to those kinds of religious freedoms in this country, which, let's face it, Walker, they have been under attack severely over the last 8 years.
Yeah, and I'll say by President Trump's Supreme Court nomination, that in itself was a sign that he is in not only in favor of religious liberty, he is willing to put people around him and on the Supreme Court that will rule in favor of religious liberty and honestly the First Amendment. And so that's refreshing. And I think that Obama did a lot of things via executive order that undermine religious liberty. Some of his executive orders protecting, forcing government contractors to hire anyone and everyone, even if there's a religious objection there. And hopefully in the near future, President Trump will sign an executive order that will undermine that.
We can hope. And there is reason for hope right now because of the kind of person that is in the White House. Well, also, I mentioned, I know we have to go to a break in just a second here, but the last night, President Trump, the swearing in of the country's new Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and there were even some Democrats yesterday in the full Senate vote that voted in favor of Rex Tillerson. He's a CEO, former CEO of ExxonMobil. He was a lot of different attacks against him during the period that he went before the Senate committee. But this morning, he went right to work. He was a little bit like Donald Trump. He went to work. We headed over to the State Department, and he gave a speech. Was listening to it before I came across the street to the studio. And he must have had 300 people there at the State Department all lined up. Boy, you talk about a contrast in personalities and individuals. Rex Tillerson has opposed to Hillary Clinton, as opposed to John Kerry.
Yeah.
Now, here's what he had to say. He says, America's diplomats are entitled to express political beliefs, but says, quote, we cannot let our personal convictions overwhelm our ability to work as one team. And many people think he was alluding to a so-called dissent cable signed by hundreds of diplomats criticizing President Donald Trump's immigration order. So there you have it. He was saying, you know, I'm going to get around, meet everybody this morning, and looking forward to that. But he said, you know what? We're going to work as a team here. And, you know, we work for the American people. We work for President Donald Trump. And I'll tell you what, the State Department has a long history of leaning to the left.
Yeah.
Long history.
Yeah, the State Department is entrenched with the opposing side, which is the Democrats, and honestly, not just Democrats, the uber leftists, the Hillary Clinton people, they're entrenched at the State Department. And he's honestly, Tillerson's going to have his hands full. He's probably going to have to spend a year cleaning house before he can do much overseas, which is unfortunate. But I don't remember. And it's honestly unfortunate because that the Secretary of State and the State Department, that's a very serious, they handle a lot of serious business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like necessarily the Department of Energy where they just, you know, grant contracts, et cetera. The State Department handles a lot of classified information, et cetera. And to have, honestly, Democrat plants still in the State Department is concerning. He shouldn't have to go in and clean house. There should be people there that just do their job, and they have a new boss now. But I'm afraid that there's going to be some letting go or firing, to use a more direct term, in the next coming months.
Well, you now have a businessman as president, and you now have a businessman as Secretary of State, and they're used to getting the job done. What I look forward to in the change of the Secretary of State is the attitude towards Israel.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a wholesale change because the Secretary of State, the State Department, has been hostile to Israel for years.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I think we're going to see a change in that, and that will be welcome. It's a new day for America, Walker.
It is. It's a very refreshing day.
All right, got to take a break. I think we have a guest after the break.
Yeah, we have Gregory Kukul. I believe I'm pronouncing his name right. He is the founder and president of Stand to Reason, and he wrote a book called The Story of Reality, and it just goes through the Bible and how realistic and true it is.
All right. Fred Jackson, Walker Wildman here on Today's Issues. We're back right after the break.
I think I've got a stumper for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
That's funny now.
But put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is.
But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
It is interesting that in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., the first and last rays of sunlight fall every day upon its tallest building, the 555-foot Washington Monument. And there on its top, inscribed on the four-sided aluminum capstone, are the Latin words Laus Deo, which means praise be to God. This simple expression of praise reflects America's abiding belief that God has blessed our country with liberty and divine favor. Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman again. We're going to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, for our spiritual heritage tours in June and September, and we'll see this Washington Monument. That's only one of the many monuments and places we'll see. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will lead the way as we talk about the places, the time, the events, and the people of our early American Christian heritage. For more information, visit the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Hundreds of liberals rioted at the University of California, Berkeley last night, burning stores, smashing windows, and clashing with police. The rampaging mob forced the university to shut down a speech by conservative firebrand Milo Yiannopoulos. They also attacked pro-Trump students and caused significant damage to the Martin Luther King Jr. Student Union. The birthplace of the free speech movement became its graveyard. So here's what needs to happen. President Trump should immediately issue an executive order blocking Berkeley students from receiving any federal funding. And the same goes for any other public university that wants to silence conservative voices. Free speech for all or no federal money. Ironically, it was liberals who silenced a gay immigrant and vandalized a building named after a civil rights legend. Who knew there were so many homophobic, racist, xenophobes at Berkeley? I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues. Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman sitting in today for Tim. And for Ed, Tim, as we mentioned, our president had the sheer delight, I'm sure, of being at the National Prayer Breakfast this morning. We've been talking about that in the first half hour. President Donald Trump, his first National Prayer Breakfast, and as we've just been saying, it was a tremendous speech, really, from him. And high on his agenda, he said, will be the annulment of the so-called Johnson Amendment, returning freedom of speech to the pulpits of this country and to nonprofit organizations. You can actually speak out about the issues of the day and speak out about where candidates stand on particular issues. And in particular, pastors won't be afraid to say, you know, here's candidate A, and here's what he believes, and, you know, I think I'm going to vote for him. It's that kind of thing and that kind of change that Donald Trump says he's going to be fighting for. He's going to be fighting for religious freedom, freedom of speech in this country. You know, when you think of battles over freedom of speech, we often hear, you know, that cry from our university campuses across the country that they are places of freedom of speech. Well, not so last night. At the University of California, Berkeley, there was a riot. There was a riot there. We're going to play you a little bit of audio from a video that we have right now on onenewsnow.com. And you'll probably hear a little bit of noise in the background. That's part of the riot last night. And I'll try to explain some voices as we go through this. But it was a riot because they were scheduled to hear from a Breitbart news editor, Milo Yiannopoulos. He's a controversial guy. But, you know, Berkeley, if you remember Berkeley, back in the 60s, it was the site of the anti-Vietnam War demonstrations. They celebrate, they say, freedom of speech. But last night, there was a riot in advance of his arrival, the speaker's arrival, and it got really nasty. So let's just roll a little bit of that so you get a taste of it.
This is sexist, anti-gay.
We have the right to
to defend ourselves. And so this shutting down Milo Yiannopoulos and doing whatever is necessary to do that is our right to self-defense.
It's just absolutely horrific what's going on. It's horrible. It's disgusting what's going on right now. And it's one thing to protest someone's right to come here and speak, but it's another thing.
And at this point, they were breaking windows. They were lighting fires, these protesters. We'll listen to a little bit more.
Came to see if I could get into the Milo event. I support free speech. You know, it's Brown Plaza, sort of birthplace of campus free speech. So I decided to come to see if I could get in, see what he had to say, and see the marketplace of free speech ideas come about. And it just got shut down by a bunch of people in black bloc, you know, protester masks.
Yeah, there you have it. It got really nasty. Now, here's what's interesting. You heard that young student there. A lot of students just wanted to show up and listen to the speech, Walker. You know, freedom of speech on campus, supposedly. Here's what's really interesting. The ones causing the problems, if you go and watch this video right now on onenewsnow.com, the ones causing the problem were all, as I said this morning, in uniform. Mm-hmm. They were wearing all black garb, and they had their heads covered. It's like they all went out and they got a team jersey, all right?
Yeah.
What does that tell you? This was well organized. Mm-hmm. It was financed.
Yep.
They knew what they were up to, why they were there. Now, a university official came out a little bit later and said this was a dark day for Berkeley, and you bet it was. It's a dark day for Berkeley. This guy is controversial from Breitbart News. He is very controversial, but he was invited there by the Republicans because he has some viewpoints that some Republicans would support.
Yeah.
But last night we saw a demonstration. We saw a demonstration of the non-tolerance of the left. And so far as we know, there have been no arrests yet, which is absolutely amazes me. You will see on this video, you can see the people who are doing this, but I guess the police officers didn't arrive in time or whatever the case may be. But it was a dark day, as this university official said, for freedom of speech at Berkeley.
Yeah, I agree. And what's unfortunate is the fellow who's coming to speak, Milo, does so peacefully, and he can't speak. And the folks who come there burning things down get the stage for the night.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a guest.
Yeah, we have Mr. Gregory Kokel, and he is president of Stand to Reason Ministry and is also has a radio show on American Family Radio on Sunday afternoon, 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time. And he also authored The Story of Reality, which I'm very interested in. Thank you for being on with us, Mr. Gregory.
Hey, glad to chat with you, gentlemen. I'm such good friends with AFR over the years because of the broadcast. You could call me Greg.
Greg, all right, I'll call you Greg. Tell us a little bit about your book, The Story of Reality.
Well, it's called The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How the World Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between, all right? And I tell you, the reason I wrote it, two things come to mind immediately. One is I wanted to offer a kind of primer on Christianity's basics. That is, what are the critical or the essential elements that are at the very foundation of our worldview? The kinds of things that are so important that if you took any one of them out, you wouldn't have Christianity anymore, but something else. So that was like laying a foundation, not just for Christians, because Christians have a lot of pieces, but they don't always have it put together very coherently. I want them to see all the real foundational basics, but also for non-Christians, so that they get a clear picture. I think many non-Christians reject Christianity for all the wrong reasons. They reject it because they misunderstand a lot of what it represents, okay, and what it actually teaches, all right? But I didn't want to write a theological textbook. I wanted to show how the important pieces fit together in a kind of a fascinating drama. I wanted to give a wide-angle view so Christians and non-Christians could never get lost in the details again, okay? Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. Get the basics down, okay? Mm. I mentioned that this is the story of reality because when I saw the basics kind of lay out in order, I used five words to describe the basics. Here they are: God, man, Jesus, cross, and resurrection. I'll say it again: God, man, Jesus, cross, resurrection. Yeah. If you notice, those 5 points are critical because the resurrection is also the resurrection at the end of the age for the final judgment, basically. Mm-hmm. And so you got the beginning, and you got the end, and you got everything important that happens in between. So those also form kind of the plot line of the story, if you think of Christianity as a narrative, things that happened in the history of the world, because that it is. It's a story of reality. And those tell the most important things that happened in the order they took place.
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning was God, and he made man to be in friendship with him, but man got himself in a heap of trouble, and so God initiated a rescue plan by becoming a man himself in the person of Jesus. And what Jesus did in his life and on a cross determines what happens to everyone, one way or another, in the final resurrection. God, man, Jesus, cross, resurrection. But there's one other thing there, gentlemen, that was really important to me about writing this book. And I wanted to continually press the point that what I describe in the book, and not just what I describe, but what Christianity presents to the world, is not just our spiritual fantasy. It's not our religious wishful thinking. It's not our make-believe to make me feel happy kind of story. Our story doesn't start out once upon a time for a reason. It doesn't mean to be telling a fairy tale. Rather, I wanted the reader to understand, and again, Christian readers too, because Christians don't always get this straight. They talk about, oh yeah, Christ is true, but they don't have a deep sense that we're talking about the way the world actually is. We're talking about reality. So I wanted them, the reader, to understand that the things in the story that the story describes actually exist. The events in the story really happened, or in some places are yet to happen. And in other words, it's an accounting of the way the world actually is. And the reason is nowadays, as you know, people have a way of relativizing religion. Mm-hmm. It's your truth versus my truth versus their truth, and that's the end of it, you know?
Yeah.
But as I say in the book, if the story is not accurate to reality, well, it's not any kind of truth at all, right?
Right.
So it can never be my truth. It can't be your truth. Even if we believe it, it can only be our delusion, maybe, or our mistake, or our error, but it can never be our truth.
Yeah.
And I want people to see that Christianity, at least from the get-go, claims to be true in the deep sense, and if it's not, it solves nothing at all. Of course, we have to show this to be the case. You know, it's that's another issue. How do you know it's true? But I want at least people to see from the get-go that when we tell the story, we are describing reality and not just our personal, quote-unquote, belief about God and Jesus.
Yeah, Gregory, I want you to explain something to our listeners, because what I seem to run into often is sometimes I get frustrated at non-believers and the way they handle themselves and,
sure.
and the sinful nature that they have, and honestly that we have at times. But what I've come to learn is I can't as much be frustrated at non-believers because they don't act like a Christian. That's
right.
Understandable. But I more so get frustrated at Christians who don't know what the Bible says about some of the most basic teachings of Scripture that
right.
are really, that really, if those things are not true and you can't defend them, then it kind of undermines the whole Scripture.
And I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, so can you address, as far as Christians needing to be informed on the five points that you talk about in your book?
If Christians are not clear on these basic points, then they're not Christians.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
Like I said in the beginning, I wanted to outline the sine qua non, the that without which. If you take these things out, you don't have Christianity. For example, if you don't have God, who is personal and infinite, okay, who is the king of the universe that he made, that's the first step, all right? If you don't have man that is both beautiful, made in the image of God, and broken, terribly, morally defected now because of rebellion, and therefore under God's wrath and a slave to Satan and a slave to his own flesh.
Hmm.
If you don't have Jesus as the God-man, fully God, fully man, one person, two natures, and dying on a cross as a substitute for us, that his work on the cross reconciles us to the Father. If you don't have Jesus risen from the dead, as Paul said, if you don't believe that, people should feel sorry for us if that's not really true. That's 1 Corinthians 15. And if you don't have a final resurrection to reward or judgment, you don't have Christianity anymore. Now, maybe Christians know those things, and it's just a jumble, and that's the way it is for a lot of Christians. And what this book helps to do is it helps to put it together in a coherent way so that they get it. I mean, my goal with the book is in part to reach Christians that have been around for a long, long time. And as many have told me when I do these talks at churches, they told me, man, I've never heard it expressed that way before. Why hasn't anybody put it together for me that way? It's a terrible liability in the church. They can't see the forest for the trees because the trees are just jackstrawed in a pile in front of them, you know what I'm saying. And so if they don't hold to those things, they're not really Christians. But they may hold to them in a loose, confused kind of way. And there's no good excuse for this, gentlemen. I agree with you. It's frustrating.
Greg,
but this is what the book is meant to do.
Yeah.
In a very straightforward, easy kind of fashion, it's meant to lay this out. I wanted actually the reader to enjoy the journey, so I adopted a storytelling voice for the narrative. I wanted anyone who picked up the book to feel that I was talking directly with them, that I was personally walking them through the account of how the world began, how it ends, and everything important that happens in between.
Yeah, and honestly, Greg, and this is meant as a compliment and not an insult, I love the simplicity of this book. It gets into very hard truths, very deep truths of Scripture, but it lays out the five main things that Christians have to agree on in order, honestly, as you said, to be a Christian. And so I commend you for that. And,
Thank you. And
you know, we need to go back to the basics sometimes, and that's what your book does, because we have to have, like you said, the basics in order to be a Christian.
Right.
But anyways, Greg, where can people find out about your book?
Well, let's see. There's a website that tells a lot of detail and also gives you links to where you can purchase it. The website is the same name as the book.
Okay.
The title of the book is The Story of Reality, and so the website is thestoryofreality.com. Very, very simple. And they can also get, you know, I do the show there every week on Sundays. You know, I've been talking about it, and if you have archives of the show, people can get... I think 2 weeks ago I did a, or maybe last week on Sunday, in fact, I was in Jackson, Tennessee, and I did an event in the evening, and a woman drove into the event. She said, I was just listening to you on AFR talking about the story of reality. So last week's show, if they check your archive, goes into a lot of detail about it.
Great, Greg. Well, hey, thank you for coming on with us. We encourage our listeners to go to your website, thestoryofreality.com, find out more about your book, purchase your book. And once again, thank you for your ministry. Thank you for being on AFR every week. We enjoy your programming, and we'll talk to you later.
Well, good. Walker and Fred, it's a privilege of me to be on your station and your programming and also to talk with you today.
All right.
Thank you so much.
God bless you.
Thank you so much, Greg. You're listening to Today's Issues. Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman sitting in for the regulars today, Walker. your dad enjoying the National Prayer Breakfast today, I'm sure, and always a thrill to be there. And right now on the line, we've got Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Not too bad. Did you get up to Washington for the prayer breakfast?
No, I didn't. Do you know, I never have been to the National Prayer Breakfast. Never.
Sandy.
I know. Well, you know what? There's a reason which I won't say. But I have actually have a very good reason. No, I really do, but I can't. I'm not gonna. Today I was watching on television. Oh my goodness!
Wasn't it something?
Yes.
Oh.
Just amazing. Just to hear Donald Trump talk. I heard his speech. I did not hear the other parts of it.
Yeah.
But I really do think we're dealing with someone who's had a transformation. I don't know to what extent what that means. It's just that the humility. The acknowledgement of God and our need for God.
Yeah.
The acknowledgement that wealth and riches does not bring contentment, that we are more than body and substance, and the stuff that we have, that we are we are spiritual beings with the soul. I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, Sandy, we were chatting earlier. A lot of conservatives early on in the campaign, from the time he had announced that he was going to run for president, you know, we had the image, I guess, that TV created for us and perhaps what we read of a Donald Trump, you know, billionaire, playboy, all of that out there. But, you know, as time has passed, and yes, you know, the country obviously kind of gathered around him and said, yes, we want him to be our candidate, Republican candidate, and then the country voted him in. But the more I learn about Donald Trump, he is not this shallow doofus individual that, and I have to confess, the image I had of Donald Trump is totally wrong. He runs a whole lot deeper than what a lot of people thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that's true, Fred, but I would say, look, any of us, apart from our not acknowledgement of God and our acceptance of Jesus, mm-hmm. really are pretty shallow, mm-hmm. selfish, mm-hmm. flawed, mm-hmm. pretty obnoxious beings. And even with Jesus, we become pretty obnoxious sometimes. But we are transformed. We become great by the greatness of His Spirit. You know, I'm not declaring, because I think that's dangerous. I don't know. All we know is the fruits. We yeah. see the wow. fruits. We see the decisions He's made. I just reported on the show this morning. Three different things He's done in the last few days that people may not even know about. You know, the orders that He signed on Friday, we've had a problem with refugees coming from Muslim-dominated countries. Just a tiny, tiny percentage of them have been Christians. And we know that Christians are terribly persecuted in those countries. So for some reason, under the Obama administration, hardly any of them made it in. He's changing that. Mm. He's changing it so that Christians who are being persecuted will get favor. And so the other part of this, we just got, there was a draft. Now, this is being reported by The Nation, which is a leftist publication, but they actually include a copy of this draft executive order establishing religious protections for people of conscience mm-hmm. on the moral issues. Let me just read a bit of this. This, of course, The Nation thinks this is terrible. This is what they write. The four-page draft order, a copy of which is currently circulating among federal staff and advocacy organizations, construes religious organizations so broadly that it covers, quote, any organization, including closely held for-profit corporations, and protects religious freedom in every walk of life when providing social services, education, health care, earning a living, seeking a job, or employing others, receiving government grants or contracts, or otherwise participating in the marketplace, the public square, or interfacing with federal, state, or local governments. So in other words, those people who have those deeply held beliefs on these moral issues will not be punished or forced to do anything that's against their conscience by the government. That's basically what is my understanding of this executive order that we have a draft of right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, we know people by their fruits. He's actually doing things that he promised, you know? Mm-hmm. We talked about how, I remember not knowing his, you know, wondering about his character, but remembering that Jesus said that whoever is not for, not against us is for us.
Yeah.
And he talked about Christianity and the importance to preserve it and protect it. And he's acting on that.
Mm. Yeah.
It's amazing.
You know, that draft that you just read of an executive order, you know, it kind of goes to what he was talking about this morning in the speech, how, you know, he talked about the sacred right, religious freedom. He addressed the Johnson Amendment, et cetera, et cetera. But it goes to, and we were just talking about this a moment ago, Sandy, about the Klein case in Oregon, that couple that was put out of business because of their religious beliefs. It goes to the Hobby Lobby case. Mm-hmm. It goes to, you know, Chick-fil-A or whatever the case may be, is that Christians, Donald Trump, President Donald Trump believes that Christians do not have to check their beliefs at the door when they go into business or offer a service to the public.
And this is in a direct,
contradiction.
Something like that, to Barack Obama's orders, which were the opposite, certainly on federal contracts, federal businesses, that there was a litmus test that you had to embrace LGBT rights or transgender rights or contraception for everyone, you know, so-called women's rights, in order to do business with the government. So if he does sign this order, that's amazing. It really is amazing.
Sandy, you've been watching Washington and been in Washington at times for a long time. And I got to ask, this from The Nation, the executive order leak that you're talking about, is it normal for things like this to be leaked to the media?
I had to think about that. You know, there have always been leakers, Walker. I think back to the Watergate era. There were lots of leakers. You know, in fact, Senator Patrick Leahy, his old nickname before, you know, so old now that people your age don't know about it, it's Leahy Leahy, because he leaked national security secrets out of the church committee in the 80s, which put national security agents at risk. Leahy Leahy. So leaking has been going on for a long time. Inside the White House, it does seem like there are some moles, there are some people inside the various agencies who hate Trump. So I do think that he has, maybe I see more bold enemies undermining him in ways we're actually seeing than I've seen in the past. But that doesn't mean there hasn't been some of this in the past. I don't think you saw it with Obama. I mean, who leaked on Obama? I'm asking.
Yeah, you know? And also I was also seeing there was leaks on his conversations with foreign leaders recently. The Associated Press released some comments that he made to Mexican president, et cetera. And so I just find it very interesting. And I think this is going to have to stop. You can't have private conversations that go on between two national leaders being leaked every other day from the White House and nobody is held accountable to it.
No, I agree. And, you know, the problem is Trump's enemies, the broad category, is not just people on the left. It's also people in the Republican Party.
Who are, and
some of them, you know, some of the people he's chosen to work with him have close associations with some of the never Trumpers who hate him and they disdain him. So you don't know where this is coming from. And it's really hard. It is true to say that Trump's circle of friends is small, and it would include, all the American people who voted for him and supported him. That's his support. It's not the media. Yeah. It's not Hollywood. It's not the Republican establishment. And it's not most of the bureaucrats in Washington. He's surrounded by enemies. So we really need to pray for him, pray for his protection, pray for his family, pray for his heart and mind. But I see God bearing fruit in him already. I just do. He seems sober. He seems to be taking his responsibilities seriously. And out of his mouth is coming these things we never heard before. Remember when he was on the campaign trail? He said he never asked for forgiveness. I don't think he would say that now.
No.
I think we're seeing a man who's transforming. You know, the weight of responsibility can change us all. I have a silly example of this. When I went to be president of, well, it's not silly, but I don't mean to. It's certainly not a direct comparison. I'm not putting myself in this category. But when I went to, I was on Chicago on radio for years. I did the drive time show for 3 hours, and I had a lot of other responsibilities. I was very active in Chicago, Illinois politics and issues, life and all of that. So, but then when I came to Washington to be the president of Concerned Women for America, suddenly it's a, you know, membership of 500,000 people. We had chapters in every state. I had like 40 employees in the office, and I had some of the best minds in Washington working for me. Then I say all that to say that I sensed in myself, I grew up a lot. You know, I sort of matured in that position. And not that I wasn't sober before, but I became even more sober. And it does change you. I can see that in the microscopic comparison I just gave you, my own experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I was listening to Paul Ryan this morning talk about, and Paul Ryan was not a disciple of Donald Trump during the campaign. But this morning he's excited, and I think it's sincere. He's excited about working with Donald Trump because he's a president like we've never had before. He is a businessman, and he is out to get the job done. So, Sandy, we appreciate what you do every day here on American Family Radio. Sandy Rios in the morning, 7 o'clock Central. You can tune in and keep an eye out for us. We appreciate you, Sandy.
Thank you, Fred. My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
All right. You take care. All right, much more ahead here on today's Issues with Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman. We've got to take a little break here for news, and then we're right back with much more. Stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.